comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome each and every one of you, whoever you happen to be and wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous planet. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. And I want to thank those of you who responded already to what I mentioned for the first time last night. And that is, we have a number of members who have had to drop out, had to cancel their memberships because, first, they lost their jobs and in this economic downturn, and then they ran out of unemployment benefits. They've reached the end of their benefit period, and so they've had to drop out. And I said, hey, you know, if you really want to do something that it will help them, it'll help the show, they would appreciate it, how about sponsoring somebody for, say, a three-month membership until they can get back on their feet? And we've already had two or three folks that have responded to that, and I really want to tell you how much I appreciate that. And they do, too. Two of them have already received emails from me telling me that someone has decided to sponsor them for another 3 months of membership. And I'm quite certain they're very grateful and very thankful for that. And if you would like to do that, please just send me an email and I'll explain how you do it. And it's real simple. Now, let me do something very quickly here that is for you, because we do have a change in what we're doing here tonight. I had told you we're going to have Open Line Live tonight. We try to do that once each week. And after the show last night, I opened my email, as I always do, and I found an email from someone that I've been trying to get back on our show now for some time, and his email said he would love to be back on the show, and we had been discussing that his schedule was all very, very busy for the next few weeks and so forth, but this email said, but I do have tomorrow night open if you want to do the show tomorrow night. So we're going to move Open Line Live further into the week. And we'll get to it this week, I hope. I think we will. But my guest tonight is going to be Lloyd Pye. However, I did tell you that we have a free gift for you that is free for you to download. And you have to do it during the show tonight, okay? And I want you to get your hands on it. And the way you do it is go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Now, if you've already got that open, we just made a change just now in the main page. So you need to refresh your browser if you've already got it open. And you will see right under those buttons where you click to listen or watch, you will see a new link that says free gift. Now that's going to be there during the show tonight. After the show tonight, we'll take that away. But I want you to be able to get that. So click it. Download and enjoy. We'll be back right after this. right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Everything you know is wrong. How about that? Well, that is the title of some very impressive work done by my guest this evening. Author and lecturer Lloyd Pye is my guest this evening. He's been with us before, but it's been a while. He's also well known for his work with the Star Child skull, and there have been some recent big developments with that, and it is my pleasure, Lloyd, to say welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Glad to be with you.
Lloyd, actually, as I mentioned in a very brief conversation with you today, because, folks, I caught him while he was in a business meeting, and he stepped out to talk with me for just a few minutes. But I see actually a connection between the Star Child skull and your work with Everything You Know Is Wrong, and I want us to get into that some tonight. But sort of bring us up to date on the Star Child skull. What's there have been some recent developments. What's happened?
Well, they really have, but probably before we do that, Kevin, we ought to give some background for those in your audience that don't really know what it is.
Okay.
And to do that, I should say that it's a real, true bone skull found in Mexico in about 1930. The girl that found it thought it was a human deformity and left it at that. She kept that one and another skull that she found, long story behind all that, but she kept them as souvenirs through her whole life and found that she was dying in the early 90s, passed them along to another couple. They kept them for 5 years. They passed them to another couple, Ray and Melanie Young in El Paso, Texas, and they, Melanie, was a neonatal nurse, and she knew right away that it wasn't a typical human deformity, that it was very, very bizarre relative to a human. It was too light. Everything about it was too symmetrical. All the parts of it were all wrong. She just knew it was not human in that sense. So she and her husband happened to be members of MUFON, a mutual UFO network of El Paso, and they knew about aliens. So she said to Ray, you know, this really could be the skull of a gray alien. It looks just like a gray. It has all the features, and it did. It had the bulbous top, the crease down the top, in the middle of the top rear, the very small lower face giving it a heart-shaped look. It had everything it needed to be a gray alien, and she said, we really ought to have this thing checked out, and he agreed. So they contacted me, and that's how I got started. And after a year, all of that was in early 99, and after all of 99, by the end of that, I was convinced that it really wasn't entirely human, that the physiology just wasn't there. You couldn't find human corollaries in it. The parts were there, many of them, not all of them. It's missing some key human parts. But what was there was just so different. I just couldn't imagine that it was a deformed human. So what we needed was the genetics to be solved. And so we started that in late 99. We took a shot at that with a forensic lab that wasn't really capable of recovering ancient DNA, but we couldn't get any of the six labs that were capable of doing that to give it a shot. So we gave it to the forensic lab in the hope that they might be able to pull out a miracle and tell us what it was, and they couldn't really. They tried. They in the end made an announcement of what they thought they had found, but it was a mistake. We've proven now on two occasions that it was a mistake, so there's no doubt that it was a mistake. But scientists and Wikipedia and other sources out there will still insist that test has to be listened to because it was the first one, and science doesn't want that test to be wrong, so they just don't acknowledge anything else that's ever occurred since then. It's very frustrating. But anyway, just the scientists, just let them spin. Their turn is coming, and we're going to be able to prove it, you know, differently now. So the second, that was in 99, that test. The second DNA test was in 2003, and that one showed very clearly that the Star Child's mother was human. Its mitochondrial DNA was from a human being, no question about it, but its parental DNA, the nuclear DNA that comes from both parents, could not be recovered in six full attempts. So what that told us, what that made clear, was that the father was not human, or, you know, not entirely human. Something was very, very unusual about the father of the star child. If it has a mother, and if you can recover its mitochondrial DNA as easily as that was recovered, you should have been able, if the father was human, to very easily recover its nuclear DNA, and that would have been the end of it. We would have just packed up in 2003, and that would have been it. You know, deformity done and over. So because they couldn't recover, we knew what we had. We knew we had an alien dad, a non-human dad, but we couldn't prove it. In 2003, the primer technology that was available just did not permit us to establish it beyond any shadow of scientific doubt. Now, however, there is technology available that allows us to do that, that would allow us to do it, you know, if we had the money to do it. It's called 454 genome recovery, using 454 technology, a machine that allows massive recovery of the nucleotide so that you can recover a whole genome, whatever it is. We assume the star child will be in the range of human, so that's 3 billion base pairs. So we've been, since 2003, well, since 2006 when the technology came online, we've been looking for the money to get it done, but it's very expensive, $250,000 approximately, for quite a while. And so now I finally, a couple of months ago, a geneticist contacted me and he said, look, I can use new technology that's available now that's not 454. It's called shotgun sequencing, but it will allow us to recover smaller parts of the star child's DNA and will allow us to have, to prove, rather, that it's there. It'll either be there or not, but if it's there, as you think it's there, we'll find it. We'll get it. We'll get something to show that the nuclear DNA is there, and then that should make it a lot easier for you to get the funding that you need to have all of the sequencing done. And I said, great, whatever you can do, I'm ready to push all the chips out to the middle of the table again, and let's see what we have. And so I got him a sample of it, sent it to him, and he said, he'll let me know something in about 3 weeks. And about 3 weeks later, sure enough, I get an email from him that says, hang on, Dorothy, we're not in Kansas anymore. And so I called and we talked, and what came out of it was, he had indeed recovered the star child's nuclear DNA. He had. No question, it's there. And the part that he found was located on chromosome 1. I mean, it's that specific. Now, how does he know that? Because he can run what he finds. He can run the sequences that he finds of nucleotides, of base pairs, through the National Institute of Health, the NIH database. And that database has about 120 different, and new ones are added all the time, animal species types, so that you have viruses, bacteria, mollusks, crustaceans, invertebrates, vertebrates, primates, the whole nine yards, and samples of everything, basically, every type. And so it's really, really good coverage. It's trillions, literally trillions of base pairs in this database. So when you pull up a piece of DNA and you run it through there, you're going to find, you know, some kind of match. And when he did it with the star child, sure enough, he did find that part of it was human. But he also found, and that's what this is the news, Kevin, he also found parts that are not only not human, they're not found on Earth. Now, that's a pretty big story. Not found on
That's
Earth.
A gigantic story.
Yeah, because it just opens up incredible vistas of what we're going to be able to prove, and that's what he said. He said, look, right now, we're not proving anything. What we're showing is a tendency of where this testing is going to go. But you can be sure that if I'm pulling this up now with this little... He made a great analogy. He said, imagine if you had a gigantic bowl with, you know, like 10,000 jelly beans in it of four different colors. And if you reached both hands in together and pulled up two fistfuls, it would be a pretty representative sample of what's in that, of what's in the of the jelly beans in the giant bowl. But if you go in with just your forefinger and your thumb and reach down in there and pull out a few, you know kind of what's in there, but it's not really representative. And if you keep plunging your thumb and your forefinger in, you're going to pull out some interesting, you know, samples, but it's still not as representative as you need. But over time, you pull out enough of those little ones, and you will have a representative sample of what you have in there. And he says, that's what I'm doing. He says, my shotgunning is going in with my forefinger and my thumb, and just pulling out a few at a time, relatively speaking. But he says, you put this thing through a 4.5-4 machine, when you're pulling out, you know, a million at a time, of the 3 billion, and he says it pretty quick, it's going to add up, and he says it's going to show that this is fairly representative what I'm getting already, and what I'm getting already is astounding. So we're going to really make history with this. So we now have to operate at a much higher level. Our goals can be lifted much higher, from instead of just a television documentary for the BBC or Nova or something like that, we can now make a movie, a documentary film of this process and this project on the scale that Michael Moore does, you know, or somebody, or Al Gore or somebody like that. We can actually do a documentary that can go in theaters, because this is going to be a big worldwide story. And also,
I would say it's a worldwide story right now, just with what you've got.
Right.
If I understand the importance of what you've said, what you're telling us is that you can say with certainty that this skull is part human on the mother's side.
Right.
And that you can say with some certainty that there is father's DNA there.
Right.
And that it does not match anything that we know about on this planet.
At this point, that's right. Exactly. We've got DNA in there that has so far not been recovered from any species on the planet. Right.
That's absolutely explosive. That's explosive information.
Well, you know, we're being careful not to put it out for major media consumption or any of that. We're just keeping it within the family of alternative researchers right now, because the mainstream, number one, they don't want to deal with it. I mean, I've had it out there for 2 months now, and nobody from the mainstream has called, and they're not going to. This is not a story that science wants to deal with or the mainstream media want to deal with. They won't do it until we say that we're going to call a press conference and get up in front of them and sort of cram it down their throats where they just don't have any choice. But, you know, I want our community to know that we're going to win this. We're now in position where we can start doing a little bit of gloating, you know, because our turn is coming, no question about it.
So, well, and look, part of the problem with the media, they like to refer to themselves as mainstream, and that's really a misnomer. They are not mainstream. They are fringe as it is possible to be, because they're really only reporting things that are of interest to people out on the fringe of society. What you're doing is where the bulk, at least in America, this is where the bulk of people have an interest. Maybe not when they're out in public, but when they get home and they get on their computers and get on the internet, the number one search genre after the porn sites, the number one search genre is anything that's alternative, paranormal, UFOs, extraterrestrials, that sort of thing. That's the mainstream.
Well, you know, I'd almost argue with that, Kevin, because I don't think that any of the main polls that I've read never get up over 50% of people that believe in UFO and aliens or alien and UFO reality.
Yeah, that's when they're asked face to face.
The larger polls that you always see in again the mainstream media, so I don't know. And you may be right, but I don't, and just in being in the world, being out in it and being at the point of the spear of the star child, I can tell you that for the most part, the reactions I get from most people is that, well, wait a minute, if what you're saying is true, why wouldn't I know about it already? Why don't I know about this already? I get that question more than any other thing, Kevin, from people who don't know, who aren't from our community.
Mm-hmm.
They say, why don't I know about this already? Because they are brainwashed to believe that mainstream science and mainstream media tell them the truth. That's what they've come to believe, so that if anything is worth knowing, the mainstream media will put it out there. The networks, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox will put it out there.
Well, it's true. There's a vast ocean of mushrooms. That's true. There's a vast ocean of mushrooms all over the place.
Yeah.
However,
sheep, call them what you want, but yeah, sheeple.
Yeah. But when you look at the statistics that Google publishes about the main genres or categories that people search, it's number two after the sex sites.
Yeah, but understand, the people that are doing searching are, for the most part, intellectually inquisitive people. They're not the sheep, you know, the sheeple or the mushrooms or what, you know, whatever.
Well, that's a fair observation.
You know, I mean, not everybody really surfs the internet that much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really don't. And if they don't, they're not that aware of what's really going on out there. And so I would say we're in a really good-sized minority. I'm not saying we're a tiny minority by any stretch, but I do believe that we are in a minority, and that's going to have to be turned around, and it will be eventually, sooner or later, in the next few weeks or a couple months, or, you know, I can't tell you when exactly. Our geneticist is going to reach a point of redundancy and of repetition in what he's doing, where he can come out and we can call a news conference and he can say, okay, here's where we are at this point. Here is how much we have proved. Here is how much we know. And here's how much we have left to prove that we intend to prove. And let the debate begin, and let all the complaining begin, and let all the, you know, the weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth from the mainstream.
Yeah, because then they're going to have to report that everything we know is wrong. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Lloyd Pye, and we're talking about the Star Child skull, and that really is pretty much the focus of what we're going to talk about here this evening. But Lloyd, as we went away for break, I made the comment that this DNA work with the Star Child skull is pretty much going to fall into the category of everything you know is wrong.
Well, it's certainly going to force science to confront the fact that at least a large part of what they know is wrong, because there'll be ripple effects from this, from accepted alien reality on Earth 900 years ago, and a being that will, in the end, I think, come out with a genomic package that's going to indicate that it could not possibly have been the product of a sexual union between a human and something else. It's going to, in the end, I think, be judged as being nothing else, nothing short of a genetically engineered being. And when we get to that point, which I'm confident will come, that means that genetic engineering was going on this planet 900 years ago. So it takes it away from the ability of science to say, well, no matter how weird it is, like the Hobbit, for example, no matter how weird it is, it's got to be a human of some kind because we don't allow anything else. Well, yeah, there's a point beyond which you just can't say that. You know, it's just, you're just going to have to accept that, you know, alien reality is real. And I think the Star Child can move it to that, past that point where they just can't pull the old, it's got to be some kind of weird human BS, that they will do if you give them half a chance. And we, you know, we just have to hope, and we do believe that it's going to be that it will, Star Child will move out far enough that they just can't say that.
Well, of course, you, and I agree with what you're saying, but you know that there are going to be geniuses that are going to step forward and make that claim in spite of all the evidence being laid in front of their eyes. There are going to be some that are going to say that.
Their job. Understand, Kevin, you and I both know how this is a game we're all involved in, like a football game or a baseball game or anything else. It's a contest. It's a sport. It's they want to win for their side. They have a team that they're a part of. We're part of a different team, mm-hmm. and we want our team to win. And we understand, you know, we all do, that we have a very, very onerous burden of proof placed on us by them saying, well, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. We don't have to, you know, meaning science, we of science, we don't have to supply extraordinary proof because we're making claims that we judge to be reasonable. Mm-hmm. Anybody makes a claim that's in conflict with our basic tenets is going to have to, we're going to raise the standard on you, so it isn't just proof, it's got to be overwhelming, extraordinary proof. Well, so that's what we're stuck with. We've known since 203, I mean, in a court of law, we could have won the case back in 203 that the Star Child had a non-human father. But we couldn't win in the court of public opinion because science wouldn't let us. Now, so we have to do it. Well, that's how it is with everything. You were mentioning everything you know is wrong. It isn't just this. I mean, all right, let's look at for another example out there that I don't even address in my book, Everything You Know Is Wrong, because I didn't know about it at the time I wrote that book, but this is a fairly new thing. The electric universe theory, but I use it because it's kind of like neutral ground and easy to talk about. In the electric universe theory, which is in direct opposition to mainstream science's contention that gravity is the source of everything, of cohesion in the universe. Gravity holds everything together. Gravity is the force that drives the engine of the universe. Gravity, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what people don't know, everybody hears that. Why? Because Newton formulated gravity, laws about gravity, and Einstein came along and did all his work about gravity. But the problem is, gravity is too weak to do all that it's supposed to do, and everybody understands that now. Everybody understands gravity is entirely too weak. The thing that is strong enough to do it is electricity or electrified plasma. And if you were to replace gravity with electricity, everything works. All the math works, everything works. Now, everybody knows this. But they can't acknowledge it because it means just uprooting everything they've already built over the last 100, 150 years, just like with evolution. Everybody's realizing that Darwinian evolution, that evolution does not work, mutations, growth, you know, improvement by mutation doesn't happen. Everything spirals down from mutations. You don't get better from mutations. You always go down. Everything they do is showing that. But they can't give it up because it would play into the hands of the creationists, and nobody wants to do that, and I don't either. So there you've got two things right there that are just bedrocks of mainstream science. Gravity is the center of everything? Wrong, wrong, wrong. What do you think black holes and dark matter and dark energy and all this massive amounts of stuff that's supposed to be out there that we can't see, weigh, judge, hold, test in any possible way? Why is it there? What is dark matter? What is dark energy? What are black holes about? What is all that? It is nothing but stuff they've made up, Kevin, just made it up, fudge factors, to make the math for gravity work. And why? Because electricity is so much stronger than gravity. So they have to give gravity these fudge factors to make it work, to make it hold together, to make the universe hold together. And it's just ridiculous. It's just absurd. They pile absurdity on absurdity to make gravity work. It's ridiculous.
Well, and they ought to be able to see that, I mean, there's a very close example, and that is the moon. You know, scientists are willing to say that the gravity of the Earth is simply not strong enough to have captured the moon. The moon is too big, and it simply could not have captured it. If it's too big to have captured it, it's too big to hold it. I mean, it's too big to be held. So the moon, its size relative to Earth and its gravity relative to Earth gravity are a mismatch. And so they ought to be able to see just from that that gravity's not the story. There's another thing, though, in genetics. You bring this up, and I think you just do a masterful job with your book and your lectures on everything you know is wrong. There are people who think that we somehow are descended from or ascended from the great apes, the primates. And I was doing some study about that, and I found out the great apes have 24 chromosome pairs. We have 23. And then someone has written that we actually have had 24, but 23 and 24 are fused together into one, and that there is no morphological force in nature known that can do that. Wouldn't that indicate some type of intervention from off-planet?
Right, that's a little bit wrong, Kevin. It's the first and it's the second and third chromosomes of primates. The second and third chromosomes of primates of their 24 have indeed been fused into one single chromosome in.
So I got it backwards.
Beings, right? But it's okay. But the fusing point, the way it was done. There is such a thing as fusing chromosomes in nature, but it's like it's random, and they're generally not functional. It's a screwy kind of thing. But what science says is, okay, well, we can see these screwy ones there where they're like deformities, like birth defects, you know.
Okay.
They're not really nice, clean, workable things. What it is with humans is ours is fused together end on end with the telomeres cut off and put together so that what's left works, you know, works smoothly. No, that's what can't be done, what nature can't do. And that's what somebody did in the creation of us. But not only that, you don't hear about it, but in a dozen of our other chromosomes, we have sections that have been completely reversed end on end. In other words, somebody went in there to our other chromosomes and nipped them out, lifted out segments of genes, turned them end on end, flipped them like head to toe, and put them back in, right? Relative again to the other primates. Now, this is the kind of stuff that created us. This is the kind of genetic engineering that created us. It's right there. It's clear. Really, anybody can see this, you know, that it happened. But these are the kinds of things that science simply can't allow. They can't tolerate that. So anybody that says it from their side is out of the club. I mean, just banned. Just, you know, hit the bricks. You no longer are part of the team. So that it's left to people like me to point out the obvious, which is that this is how it happened, and this is the proof that it happened, that humans are genetically engineered. We did not evolve from primates or anything like that, but we weren't, you know, divinely created to, you know, in the image of God with big G. We were divinely created in the image of gods, multiple gods, with a small g, the ones who created us, because they needed slaves and servants, and they wanted people, you know, women to have sex with, basically. So I hate to put it as bluntly as that, but that was a big part of it. So they made the new slave and servant look like them. So the women would be attractive enough for them to have partners, because there weren't that many of them here, and it was a hardship duty, and it was mostly men. And every military commander in the world can tell you what happens when a bunch of men get together in isolation in stressful situations, and there are no women around. They start fighting with each other, and that's part of what happened. So it figured into the decision to make the slave and the servant, which, by the way, they debated very seriously, as they should have, understanding that it was a very moral decision that they had to make. And so, you know, I give them credit for that.
Yeah, as you were telling that, you know, I was thinking about this. The French Foreign Legion, don't know if they still do this, but they used to. When they had a bunch of guys on some foreign remote area, the French Foreign Legion had their own house of prostitution, one for the enlisted men and one for the officers on the base. And for the exact same reason that you just told us about, because without it, these guys end up killing each other.
That's right. It causes stress and strain that is just not needed. So I think really every army, I mean, you can take this back to Hannibal or Genghis Khan or any of them, they all had their portable brothels to go along to take care of the, you know, of those needs of the soldiers. It's just part and parcel of war and soldiery throughout history. And the, you know, whoever, if indeed we go with the story of the Anunnaki, we go with, and it's the best one I know of, just because we have some written record of it through the Sumerians.
Lloyd, I hate to do it, we have to step away for a minute or two here for the break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Lloyd Pye. He is the author of Everything You Know Is Wrong. He is also the person who has been, since 1999, attempting to push forward the testing on this very unusual skull that has come to be known as the Star Child Skull. As we went away for break, you were talking about, you'd brought up the subject of the Anunnaki. And we had to cut you off because the break took over, but I want you to be able to finish that thought.
Well, it's just that if we go with that, the story that the Anunnaki supposedly told the Sumerians, which the Sumerians wrote down in their tablets 5,000 and 6,000 years ago, that Zechariah Sitchin reports in his Earth Chronicles, and which makes sense to me because we don't have any other stories right now to tell. But I don't think that it's necessarily entirely the Anunnaki at work here on Earth in the past, but I certainly think the story that they supposedly told seems to have resonance in terms of humanity. We seem to have been created when they claim they created us. We seem to have been created how they claim they created us. So I think that part of it adds up. Again, this is not to say there aren't other alien types out there, or that those types don't interact here on Earth at various times in different ways. But the story of the Anunnaki, about the Anunnaki that the Sumerians tell, seems to have proof in fact that makes it sound plausible to me, and so that's, you know, that's part of what I've written in Everything You Know Is Wrong, and part of what I'll write about in the future, because I've learned an awful lot more in the past decade than I knew when I wrote the books. The book is still very solid because so much of it is based on deep history, but there's always improvements to that, and one day I hope to be able to get around to doing that when I can get the Star Child monkey off my back.
Okay, now a couple of questions about this Star Child skull. You know, Forensics labs make use of all kinds of techniques, and we've all seen this on television, where they take, they have a skull, and they're trying to figure out who is this, and so they have a forensic artist come in, and they make a cast of the skull, and from that, then, the forensic artist builds up a face to go with that skull, and it's, you know, partly based on art, partly based on science, but they get really, really close very often to what the person actually looked like. And I wonder, has anyone like that done anything like that with the Star Child skull?
Well, yes, actually. 2 years ago, when we were on the UFO Hunters, a show on the History Channel that's since been canceled, but the UFO Hunters used to be on. When we were featured in one of their segments, they got a Hollywood a Hollywood model maker to create a version of it that I thought looked like Lee Harvey Oswald with a larger head. I don't think it was a particularly good recreation. But then this past year, with another History Channel show called Monster Quest, they got Bill Munns, and Bill Munns is a very good forensic sculptor, well known, and they got Bill to do his version of it, and I think his version is much closer. Everybody has problems with the eyes, because are you going to give it human eyes or a different kind of eyes? You can't put a human eyeball in those eye sockets, or it would stick out like frog eyes. So you have to create a new kind of eyeball. But what kind of eyeball do you create? And, you know, we went back and forth and all. So Bill's argument was, look, we don't have anything but the human prototype to go on. So I'm going to create something that looks as human as I can make it, given how different the Star Child is. So it came out really, really pretty good, an awful lot better than the one that the History Channel did. And I think we've posted it on the Star Child Project website somewhere. I can't, you know, tell it to you off the top of my head, but it's there. And you know, people can see, and it's out on the internet and other places, so people can see it. It's certainly at the Spanish language website that we have. For those who want to check that out, I know that it's there, parts of it. In fact, you can pull it up right now. El Proyecto Star Child, ELPROYECTO, El Proyecto Star Child, all one word, www.elproyecto.com, and you'll see it right there on the front page of that one, and I can direct you to that. But anyway, if anybody knows any Spanish language people that might be interested in the Star Child ebook, where they can learn all about it in Spanish, that's available through that website.
Well, as a matter of fact, anyway, we have quite an audience in Mexico, Chile, Brazil, which is not Spanish, it's Portuguese, but if you can read one, you can read the other. It's close enough.
That's what they say. It's close enough to where they can, absolutely understand, at least. Well, the Spanish can't understand the Portuguese can understand the Spanish. That's what I've been told.
Yeah, well, I speak a little bit of both, so they're so close, I don't know how you could not get it.
Because the Brazilians are surrounded by Spanish-speaking people, they have to speak Spanish. Because the Spanish only have the one country speaking Brazilian, they don't have to learn Brazilian. That's my understanding of it.
That makes sense, too.
Yeah.
All right, now, this thing is called the Star Child skull.
Mm-hmm.
Why has it been determined that this is a child? Could it not be that it's full grown, but just very small?
I've made some mistakes along the path of this journey, this 11-year journey now. I'm in my 11th year, and I've made several mistakes, and that was one of the biggest ones, was calling it the Star Child. And I'll tell you how that happened and why, and why it was a mistake. The first test we had done, the very first test in the first week that I saw it, was a series of X-rays at a facility in Las Vegas. And what they discovered there was that there's the skull and there's a detached piece of maxilla. And the maxilla is the upper part of your jaw, the upper right part of your top jaw where your top teeth are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they x-rayed that, and it had teeth, you know, down. It had two teeth still in it, and it had three holes in front where you could see that teeth had been there and been cleanly removed. So when he x-rayed it, he found that there were also five teeth impacted up in the little piece of the upper part of the bone. And so the guy said, well, you have teeth impacted here and you have teeth down, so this is a child, because that's the way it works. Teeth down, teeth up, that's a child. And he said, 5 or 6 years old, somewhere in there. And we said, well, okay, because we didn't know any better. So we took it back to where we were at the time, which was the UFO Congress, which was a lot of people in the field, and I was being advised to give it a name that would sort of resonate with our people. And so when the report came back that it was a child, we decided, okay, Star Child, that'll be it. That's what we'll call it. What I didn't realize was that immediately I was wrecking it as something for science to study seriously, because the name Star Child implies that we have an agenda in trying to prove anything about it, which is that we think it's from the Star Child of the stars. And that's what I would hear time and again from scientists was, you know, I can't fool with anything like that, because I can't have anything to do with aliens. And so for a while I would try to say, we just have an unusual skull here. And as soon as they would figure out that what it was, you know, they would bail on it, because anything to do with aliens or UFOs for mainstream scientists is just the absolute kiss of death. They can't, very few of them have the nerve to let it be known among their colleagues that they take UFOs or aliens seriously. They are really playing with their careers when they do that. They're mm-hmm. their careers. So it would take real, real serious cojones for them to get involved. And have, anyway, and then to have the word Star Child tacked on it made it that much harder. So I made this a lot harder on myself by that mistake. I would still find about 1 in 10 of the scientists that I would approach would have those cojones and would be willing to seriously evaluate it. And I got a lot of good information from those very great people.
All right, we have to step away for break, and we'll be back, folks, after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. Wish you had gotten the first hour. It was a universe or two of information, and in just a moment, I'm going to open up the telephone line so you can call in. The little lights are already blinking. The lines are lighting up. And I know you've got questions or comments for Lloyd Pye, but we'll open those phone lines in just a minute. But I want to continue with Lloyd for just a little bit here before we open the phone lines. Lloyd, I understand the problem with calling it Star Child, but is there any possibility, if we take star off of it and it's just the child skull, is there any possibility that it's not a child?
Oh, I'm sorry, Kevin. I should have said, yes, it's not a child. Not just a possibility. It's an absolute fact, ironclad fact. It's not a child. It's a fully grown adult. What happened was sometime later, when they pulled out one of the two teeth, they found that the roots were very thick and heavy of the molar that was extracted, and it was very difficult to pull out. A child doesn't have roots like that. Children have teeth that have very shallow roots, and as it comes time for them to lose their teeth, the roots dissolve so that when they put, wiggle the teeth out, you'll notice there are no roots on them. It's just, you know, it's just a tooth.
Mm-hmm.
So they can come out easily and the new teeth come in. So these had just absolutely solid, rock solid roots. So not a child's tooth, but also later research and analysis by experts in skull aging skulls by, you know, how they're put together, found that the sutures were clearly, everything about it was of an adult. So it was an adult skull, I mean, no doubt about it. We just don't know what age it was when it died, because there are a lot of things that work against telling it, because it's so durable, the bone is so durable, so different, the bone chemistry is so different from human. What we like to say is it could be anywhere from, you know, 20 to 2,000 years old. We just don't know. There's no way to know.
Well,
it's the kind of being that grows teeth, that has the capacity to grow new teeth to replace the teeth it has, like a shark.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how long it could live, you know? So we really don't know.
Well, for those who are watching on our TV channel, I've got a picture of the Star Child skull. It's on the left, and on the right is a human skull. And except for the shape of the skulls, they seem to be comparatively about the same size.
They are. The human that was found with the Star Child, they are about indeed the same. They would fit in the same volume, but their brains are very different sizes. The Star Child's brain is much bigger, even though it's physically the same volume.
Okay, tell you what I want to do. I want to open up the telephone lines and allow our audience to join us, and also our flash message board. In order, if you have a question or a comment for Lloyd Pye, in order to join us here in this discussion, the main telephone number in the studio is 623-444-5889. Now, that will work from any place on this planet, probably from Nibiru as well. 623-444-5889. If you're in the USA or you're in Canada, we have a toll-free number. If you need to call me on toll-free, please do. 888-223-4599. We also have something called the Flash Message, but now listen carefully. The Flash Message Board, well, that's for folks outside of the USA and outside of Canada. The main number will work anywhere in the world. You can call us. We had Ralph from Germany called us the other night, and we've had people from Taiwan, people from Australia, and a lot of other places have called us, people from Ireland and other places in the UK. But if, you know, we don't have a toll-free number for folks that are outside the USA or Canada. So for them, if they don't want to make the international long-distance call, what they can do is go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see a link that says Flash Message, and you can just send me a flash message, okay? Now, let's go to our first caller, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan up in Washington.
Hello, Ryan.
Boy, that phenomenon is of sheeples is sure fascinating topic.
It is.
Yeah, it's I propose that there's a new breed of people that are branching off, and they're going to be called sheeples, and they go along with mushrooms because you know, they're like, people are like sheep these days, but. I love that. That's pretty good terminology.
Yep.
There.
Do you have a question or comment?
Question, I didn't admit it.
Yeah, my question for Lloyd is, and I'll just hang up after, is the cave that this was found in, has there ever been any carvings in it or anything, any exploration? Maybe we ought to send out Jerry to go poking around in there to see if he can find anything. He likes to poke around strange caves every once in a while. I'll just take it off the air. Thanks.
Okay. What about that? Any signs of civilization in there?
The answer to that is that first of all, it wasn't a cave. It was a mine tunnel, an old abandoned mine tunnel from, you know, pre-900 years ago. So it would have been Inca, Aztec, that kind of thing. But the answer is no. No one has ever gone back to that because we don't know where it was. We don't know where the village was where she was staying when she journeyed out from that village to go exploring, and she found the cave and found the skeletons. All she said when she was handing the skulls over to the people that then handed them over to Ray and Melanie was that it was about 100 miles southwest of Chihuahua. And, you know, she's handing these things over. She doesn't know that in, you know, 8 or 10 years it's going to be important to anybody to give more detail than that. So all we really know is 100 miles southwest of Chihuahua. And if you look at that on a map, it's sort of pushing over toward, but not quite in the Copper Canyon area, but it's a fairly isolated area, like northern Arizona in the States. And we just don't know where it is, and nobody's going to be able to even search there until some member of her extended family, of that woman's extended family, hear about this and are aware that, oh yeah, that's Grandma so-and-so's old skull, or oh yeah, that's Aunt so-and-so's old skull, and then they will be able to hopefully direct us to where her family was actually from. But as so far, the fame of the Star Child has not spread far enough for that to happen.
All right, to the telephone caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Dr. Lloyd Pye. It's an honor.
Well, I should say that I appreciate that, but I'm not a doctor. I think if I was a doctor, I wouldn't have the freedom of thought that I have by not being one of them. I think that in the process of getting those doctorates, you're so thoroughly brainwashed to believe the mainstream, story that you really can't think outside the box anymore. So I'm grateful that I'm not, and I'm able to go where the evidence leads instead of where I think the evidence is supposed to lead.
Okay, so there's a bit of a misnomer, but I have to say, I've gotten involved with many arguments for either creationism or evolutionism, and I like to tell people that both of them are right to a point, and the person that I've pointed everybody to for evidence is the research that you have done personally. And I even did so in my, they call it social issues through film class. I like to call it socialism 101. he was pushing not a doctor either, but Michael Shermer's book as a textbook in his class. And I said, really? And it's saying that why evolution is the only thing, there has been no creationism. And I used it as a debate. I said, well, Lloyd Pye, and I did use doctor at the time. I do apologize for that. And I told
him,
I did tell him that there has been genetic proof that the human genes have been spliced, and Lloyd Pye, his research flat out proves it. And the professor tried writing it off as Michael Shermer style pseudoscience. And I said, well, Michael Shermer probably never did the research for himself either. And so I said, I told my classmates, said, look at Lloyd Pye's website. I gave the website your website to the entire class, and I think I woke up about maybe a good dozen people with the fact that there was some sort of creationism that happened about 250,000 years ago.
Well, it's not really creationism. I really have to tell you, I don't. I don't believe or push or advocate creationism in the sense that it's used in the religious sense, but I do say what I push and what I believe is the intervention theory. I call it intervention. It wasn't creation. It was intervention to create, if you want to call it that. Things were created here by the hands of the gods with a small g, the Anunnaki, but not, the distortion that mainstream religion has taken of those facts and turned it into the monotheistic God with a big G doing everything in, you know, this omnipotent, omnipresent way. I don't buy any of that. But I do think that there is creation, there is clear evidence of creation. More than that, there's clear evidence of life being put here in great, huge chunks of it, great loads of it. That's if you read the fossil record, that's what happened. Life comes here, is delivered here in great loads at different specific times when the planet seems ready. And this is from the very beginning, from the prokaryotes. The first thing we get are a bunch of creatures called prokaryotes whose job it is to start putting oxygen, to start turning iron in, you know, making iron oxide so that you tie up all the iron, which is very active when it comes in to contact with oxygen, tie it all up, turn it into rust, and then start saturating the water in the atmosphere with oxygen. And then come the eukaryotes. When it's time for them, they come. And then when it's time for complex life to come, they come in great loads in the Cambrian explosion. There's no evolution. There's no sign of evolution. And it's obvious, and I can do this for a very long time with a lot of details, but you're right to say that there is creation, but it is not the creation of religion. It is the creation of intervention caused by, you know, those who come and intervene on our planet for whatever reason.
Well, even in Genesis, if you read what it says instead of what people have been told it says, you have 31 verses in the first chapter of Genesis. You have the word God used 32 times. However, it's only used in English because in its original language, which is ancient Hebrew, it's not God, it's gods, G-O-D-S, plural.
Right. Yeah, well, there's still some plural mentions of gods. Why, when they were doing the redacting and the editing, this is what I've never understood, you know, Kevin, it just doesn't make sense that they would do all the editing and redacting that they did to change it to suit what they wanted it to say in 320 A.D. or whenever the Council of Nicaea did this. Why did they leave a few references in of multiple gods? Why did they leave in references that were so obviously radically dissonant? But of course, also too, they have, like, if you really look closely at it, it's clear that two different stories of Genesis have been fused together into one, and it's really a poor job.
Well, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think you've got two separate creations. It's linear. Adam doesn't happen until after the seventh day. And the creator there is definitely not the creator on day six. It's a different creator.
It's not smooth. It's not sequential. It's not smooth. There's repetition. And if you look back at it, they did a pretty bad job of the redacting and the editing that they were doing. Now, I understand, put a committee on anything, and that's what you get, you know. It's like a platypus is an animal designed by a committee.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's kind of like that. But that is what it was. The Council of Nicaea was a committee, and they were trying to satisfy a bunch of different factions to get something that a lot of different people with conflicting views could agree on. Very much like Congress.
Lord.
Bill, for example. You know? In the end, it turns out to be a mess because you've got to satisfy so many different constituents instead of just doing the right thing. And so I guess it's an example of that.
All right, back to the phone line. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin from Beaverton.
Hello, Kevin.
Lloyd, I was wondering, what are the odds that the Star Child's father was also a hybrid?
It could be. I mean, the father could be anything. All we can tell at this point, Kevin, is that he's going to be fairly radically different from human. His genome or the parts of his genome that he's contributed to the Star Child's genome are going to be so radically different that if he's a hybrid, he's probably also a genetically engineered hybrid. And let me explain this hybrid thing real quick. On Earth, with the hybrid, and the mule is the one everybody uses, so let's use the mule. You have a male donkey and a in a female horse have sex and produce a mule, a sterile mule. And when you look at that mule, you can see elements of horse and elements of donkey. You can tell that they're very closely related biologically. All right, with the star child, you've lost all. You've lost that ability to make the connection. You can see the parts, and you can see that there's something there. But when you look at it really close, nothing matches up. Everything's different, and not just different, radically different. So there's not enough there of the mother. There's not enough there of the human. So I am of the opinion, and I think it's going to pan out, that the star child is a product of genetic engineering. And right now here, our scientists are creating kids from mothers who have what's called mitochondrial disease, when their mitochondria is bad and they can't afford to pass it on to their children, because their children are going to have just a withering array of maladies. It's just the horrible thing to produce a child with mitochondrial disease. When you want to, that kind of woman wants to have a child, what they're doing is they're pulling out her gametes, moving it away from her, taking it out of her egg entirely, getting it away from her mitochondrial DNA, connecting her gamete with her husband's sperm gamete so that you can produce a zygote, and put it in a different egg entirely, so that the kid that comes out of their union is going to be, have three people, the genetics of three people in it. It's going to have the gamete from its mother and father, but it's going to have the mitochondrial DNA of a stranger, of another person. We're doing that already. The star child, to create something like the star child, is not a lot different than that, not a lot more sophisticated than that. So I'm very confident that in the end, that's what it's going to prove out, that the star child was genetically engineered 900 years ago and is not the product of a sexual union between a human and anything else. There's not enough human left there, in my opinion.
All right. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, or in the USA and Canada, toll-free 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
I hear you talking a lot about genetics. I hope this question hasn't already been answered. But I was wondering, if they could take just the father's DNA and clone it and see what we got.
Well, no, you can't really do that, because you don't, if you get whatever you get of his, is going to be a part of what the star child was. You're talking about cloning the father or the star child?
Well, the star child's father part.
So cloning the father.
The star child, it's possible maybe to clone, because you're going to have a lot, you know, you'll have its genome in the end. The star child's father, I don't know that you can clone that, because you've only got his sperm, you know, the sperm side of whatever made him. I don't know that you have the whole package that would allow him to be cloned as well. But I think this whole cloning thing, I don't think any of us will see that, because they're, you know, the moral, well, maybe not me, maybe it depends on how old you are, but I don't see that in the next 20-30 years, because of the moral objections to it and all that. I could be wrong. I just could be way wrong.
I don't agree with it either, but you know, that'd be a, you know in something like that, a scientific, you know, to just find out what was going on there, you know might be worth trying to see what happened there.
Well, I don't know that I think will happen is if we get to the point where we start acknowledging that aliens are real, and you know that it's all part of that, we're just a part of a much larger picture. I think when those aliens out there see that we're starting to move away from childhood as a species and beginning to grow up and at least hit our teen years, where we acknowledge that we're part of, you know how children are, they're just they're it. They're their own world. They don't have a good awareness of the world around them. That's childhood. That's where we are now as a species. And then you get a little older, you get it to be a teenager, and you realize that, hey, I'm part of a larger scheme here. There's a lot going on around me that is bigger and better and more powerful and more knowledgeable than I am. And that's where we need to go before the parents will step forward and say, okay, look here, we're going to start now educating you a little bit about the realities of life out here in the universe, and maybe we'll learn. But I don't think we're going to get those lessons, those instructions, until we're ready to receive them, and we're just not ready now. We're still in our infancy, and we need to grow into our teen years, and I think that requires that we accept the realities of what are out, you know, what's out there, and I think the Star Child is a good lever to move us in that direction.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi. Hi, Lloyd.
Hi.
I think you do amazing work.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to get a handle on what you're talking about. And if a creature existed where it was part human and, say, the father was not human, it didn't spread out into the population of general human life. Is that what I'm...
Tell you what, John, can you hang on through the break?
Sure.
Okay, we have a break coming up, and we'll get Lloyd to address that on the other side of the break. I don't want us to get started and have to cut him off, because I think this is going to be a pretty involved explanation. We're talking with Lloyd Pye this evening, and we're going to continue talking with Lloyd Pye on the other side of this break. Get your fingers ready to do the calling. We'll be back right after this. Okay, we are back, and we're talking with Lloyd Pye. On the telephone with us is John. And John, pose your question again. It had something to do with the proliferation of this species, I guess.
Yeah. What I'm getting from what you're saying is because the hybrid was engineered, the offspring would be sterile. Is that right?
Yes. Even if they weren't engineered, even if it was a sexual union, hybrids are generally usually sterile.
And that's the reason why we don't have that alien DNA within the general population.
We don't know. You know, our DNA is our DNA, and it's there are significant parts of it that are different from higher primate DNA. There's something like 243 genes that are not found in any other higher primate. So it's questionable. There's some very interesting things about our genome and about our DNA, but as far as there being alien DNA that we can recognize as such right now, no. There's the human genome is the human genome, and we all are within 99.99% of each other the same. Chimps are 97% the same. We share the same 97% the same genome with chimps, 95% the same with gorillas. So there's a lot of synchronicity there, and that's one of the things that the mainstream points to say, oh, well, we're clearly evolved from higher primates because we share so much of our genome. Well, that's true. 97% of 3 billion is an awful lot, as is 95% of 3 billion. But understand that most of our genome is junk DNA. We don't even use it. We use like 3% of our own genome is functional, making proteins, doing the work of keeping this going. We don't really know what the junk DNA is or what it does. But it's obviously there for a reason. It's very highly conserved. We keep creating it and passing it down through the generations. It's there for a purpose. And right now, we don't know what that is. But I suspect that when we find it out, it's going to be a part of explaining how and why we were genetically engineered. And it's not a part of the natural growth and development of something on the planet. Not that well. Junk DNA is in other species, but not that much.
All right, John. Thanks for the call.
I don't think I really answered his question there, Kevin. I skewed off about the junk DNA. But what I understood he was asking is there any sign in our genome of alien DNA? And if it is, it's not recognized as such. The parts that aren't primate are just, well, they come from viruses, or they come from they've jumped from other species, or everything just about in science can be explained away. Anything science doesn't want to deal with, doesn't want to cope with, doesn't want to recognize, they are very smart men and women, and they come up with ways to excuse around, to talk around. And one of the things we will have to contend with the Star Child is that brilliance of so many of them to come up with excuses and explanations, and, well, maybe this might have happened, or did you consider that might have happened? We have to cut all that off. We have to create, we have to build a case that is so overwhelming that even all of those persnickety types who pride themselves on coming up with the have you thought of this angle, to where it just leaves them all blowing, as we used to say in football, just leaves them all blowing snot bubbles. We just knock them out. That's what we have to do, to really win this thing decisively, and that's what we intend to do if we possibly can.
All right, we have a flash message here from Australia from Kevin. Whole lot of Kevins tonight in Australia.
One, isn't it? Wow. This is the night.
Yeah, this is the night. Well, and we've got a bunch more that listen that call in sometimes as well. Okay, here we go. Question number one, do you think this is the missing link regarding ancient humans? I already know the answer, but go ahead.
No, there is no missing link regarding ancient humans. There's no missing link regarding anything. There is no evolution in that sense at the macro level. There is microevolution, yes, that what Darwin saw on the Galapagos, microevolution, evolution in parts, change in parts, yes. Change in from species to other species, lower species to higher species, no such thing. No missing link ever been found. No missing link ever going to be found. All of these missing links that you hear reported from science, about every quarter they have a new missing link discovery. That's all just brainwashing to lull the sheeple into believing that they're on top of the evolutionary question, that they know what's going on, and that they don't have their heads wedged, basically. And it's just all propaganda, and the sheeple fall for it and are lulled to sleep, and that's just the way it is. That's just the reality we all have to live with.
The next question, I'm not really sure what he means. He says, Mr. Pye, do you think there are many more of these types of crystal skulls around the world? But see, Kevin, this is not crystal. This is bone.
Right. Yeah, he's just confused. He thinks it's a crystal skull. Yeah, it's not, but there is a lot of people confuse. They hear skull, they hear unusual skull, and because all they've ever heard of is a crystal skull, that they just make that assumption. A lot of people do that. No, it's not a crystal skull. It's as Kevin said, it is a bone skull, a real, true bone skull.
This is the skull of something that was living and breathing.
Yeah, go on the website and you'll see it for yourself very easily. Not a crystal skull at all.
All right, from Jimmy in the United Kingdom. Hi, guys. Has anybody I don't understand this. Has anybody's bones been found? I've seen something similar to this before. I'm not referring to the cone skulls that have been found in South America. I don't understand that question.
I don't either, because there's nothing else really like the Star Child, but the Coneheads are indeed as bizarre, as unusual in their own ways, as the Star Child. And I think if anybody were to do genetic analysis of the Coneheads, they would find that they're not entirely human either. I'm pretty sure they won't be.
Okay, the telephone lines are open at 623-444-5889. Toll free in the USA and Canada at 888-223-4599. And if you're outside the USA, you're outside of Canada, you can call us on our main number. It'll work wherever you are in the world. It is 623-444-5889. But if you don't want to make the international call, what you can do is go to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you will find a link that says, actually right under Lloyd's picture, you'll find a link that says flash message. And if you click that, you can send your question via flash message. Okay, now, also you need to know that, as always, if you click on our guest's photo on my site, it will take you to his site. All right, so you click on Lloyd's picture, it'll take you over to his site. Lloyd, one of the questions that I don't think I've ever asked you, and you've been with us a couple of times before, but how did you get interested in all of this?
Well, it's a good story. It's a good question, and I don't mind telling it. I started out interested in hominoids. That's Bigfoot and the Abominable Snowman, and if you get into that field, you find out that there are two more types out there that the majority of people don't know anything about. So there's basically four species types among the hominoids around the world, and they're all over the world, every continent except Antarctica. They're very common, go by hundreds of different names in the different areas where they're found. And it's a fascinating field of study that is just completely ignored by the mainstream as much as possible, because there are two great things that are going to take science down in terms of their belief in evolution. One is UFOs and aliens on UFOs, aliens, alien life, and the other is hominoids, hominoid life here on Earth. And so both of those they fight and struggle against very, very hard to diminish and trivialize as best they can, because they know with either of those, with the reality of either of those, they lose evolution, and particularly they lose human evolution, and they just don't want to do it. And, you can't blame them. They want to win, or they want to hold on to their lead as long as they can. But in the end, they're going to lose. I mean, they're wrong. There's just no way around it. So that's where I started with an interest there. And that led to my book, Everything You Know Is Wrong, Intervention Theory and all that. And I was not a UFO alien guy. I left that to other people. I mean, you can only do so much,
Yeah.
And when they gave me the Star Child skull to find out what it was about, then I began to move over into the UFO alien field, such that now I'm probably the only person in the world, really, with credentials in both those fields that are I'm qualified. I can talk about it intelligently.
All right, back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Ohio.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Lloyd. I love your work.
Hi.
And I've watched your videos many times on YouTube.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions, and then I'll hang up and listen off the air. Can you please describe again how the human genetics were so obviously manipulated? And I've also heard that humans actually have less genes than chickens or mice. And thank you very much, and have a good evening.
Okay. We do have surprisingly few genes. It was a big surprise. based on our size, it was thought for a long time that we were going to have about 100,000. And for a long time, that was the working number, about 100,000 genes. But when the genome was finally decoded, they found, shockingly, that there were only about 25 or 30,000 genes that run our complex bodies and run our brains and do all this. So it was a very big surprise to scientists that we have so few relative to what they expected us to have. But they can't argue, you know, I mean, that's what we have, 20, 25, 30,000, and that's, you know, they just can't argue with it. Now, as far as, what was the first part of it? What was the first part of the question? Can you remember?
Yeah, he wanted to know if you could explain again the gene splicing.
Oh, yeah, how we know that there was genetic engineering involved. Mm-hmm. Well, we have higher primates, as Kevin said earlier. Each parent there has 24 chromosomes that they contribute to their offspring, so the offspring, you know, we all walk around, go around with 48 chromosomes in the nuclei of their cells, in the nucleus of their cells. We have a completely different number. We have 23 from each parent for a total of 46. Now, you look at us and you say, well, how could that be? How could we be so much better and we lost two whole chromosomes in the process? Because that's an awful lot of DNA. Where did it go?
Hate to do it, but a break has taken over. We'll finish that explanation when we come back. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back. My guest this evening, Lloyd Pye. Lloyd, you were explaining how we know about the genetic splicing in the human genome.
Right. So what we have is the 46 chromosomes, as I said. Excuse me, higher primates. Sorry, have 48. And so how did it happen? Where did they go? They didn't go. As we talked about earlier, the second and third of the primate chromosomes in us are fused together, end to end, very carefully, very precisely, in such a way that they still function as they would in a primate, except differently because they've been fused together. Now, why would that happen? Why would that be necessary? What would be the point of that? Well, if you want to have sex with another species, and one species has 46 chromosomes and one has 48, and you want to make that species viable with your chromosomal package so that you can produce offspring, something's got to give. One of you's got to drop a chromosome, or one of you have to add a chromosome. So let's assume that the Anunnaki have 46 chromosomes, and they want to create a slave and a servant somehow based on the Earth model, using some of the Earth chromosomal package, but fixing it so that they can create offspring. Then the new model being, the thing they're going to create, has to have 46 chromosomes to match up with them. But it has to have a genetic package of 48 so that it's still part of the planet Earth. And so apparently that's what they did. So in creating that fusion of the second and third chromosomes, they also, in about a dozen other of our chromosomes, they took sections of the DNA, sections of the gene package, of the chromosomal package, and they cut it out, you know, with, you know, like we do our own genetic engineering. They cut those segments out, took them out of their position, flip them end on end, and put them back in and fuse them back in. It's amazing, but that's the way it is. So, it's clear that this was done to us. I mean, nobody really denies that it was done, but what science says is exactly the same thing that they used to tell me when I would come up with all these incredible physiological differences for the star child. I mean, just for example, the star child bone is not like human bone. It's like tooth enamel. It's much harder. Its whole biochemistry has changed. The entire bone of the star child is not human bone. It's like tooth enamel. Now, what kind of deformity could conceivably do that? Do you know what they say as an answer? Hmm. Nature can do anything. Nature can do anything. We give nature the full power to do anything we don't understand. We don't care. It doesn't matter. Nature can do it. So in this fusing of the two chromosomes and flipping of segments of the other chromosomes, they just say when you throw that up at them, nature can do anything. Nature can do that. Nature can do anything. And as long as they're able to sit on their throne where they are now, where they've put themselves as the arbiters of what we think we know and understand, it all has to come from science because they've established that ground rule that they determine what's real and what isn't, what you can believe and what you can't believe. We're stuck with it, that nature can do anything. But in fact, nature can't do everything. Nature cannot just do anything. And it certainly can't fuse chromosomes and flip chromosome segments the way it's been done in us. But science just won't accept that. They just say, yeah, well, okay, it's pretty weird, but nature can do anything. And then you just have to decide who you want to believe. I don't believe that. A lot of the sheeple out there do believe it, the ones who know about it. And certainly all the scientists, whether they really truly in their heart of hearts believe it or not, they have to profess to believe it, or again, they'll be kicked out of the club, so they have no choice. So that's my answer to that one. A long answer, but I hope it satisfies.
All right, I've got a flash message here from Carl in Perth, and we've only got a few minutes left before the end of the show. Carl in Perth, Australia. He says, this is Carl, but you can call me Kevin. Okay, Carl. Any other potentially contemporary artifacts found in that region of Mexico, like tools or ruins or anything?
We don't know. I haven't really ever gone down there because, if you Google it, Google Map it, you begin to see it's just you have no way to know what to begin, where to begin, what to do. And so I'm just going to leave that part to others. There will be others that will go down there and do the work that I'm not really equipped to do. I'm not an archaeologist. I'm not a geologist. I'm not even an anthropologist. I'm sort of a shade tree, all of that, but I'm not qualified to go down there and really dig it up. So I'm going to leave that. My job is sort of to motivate science to, number one, accept this as reality, and then give them all a reason to go down there and try to find out more about this. And when that happens, I think amazing things are going to come out of it, but I'm not in a position to do it.
Lloyd, after all of that you've been through with this star child skull and everything you know about it, and this last, this is my characterization, but I would call it a huge breakthrough on the DNA. What percentage of certainty do you have, you personally? How certain are you that this is alien origin, or at least partially alien origin?
100%.
No doubt whatsoever.
100%. No doubt. Now, I used to be really cautious about this, Kevin. I used to say, when I started out, I said it was like 80-20. It was going to be a human deformity. And slowly, gradually, over the course of 1999, I began to move away. And I tried to be cautious and careful, and I think I was. But there comes a point where you just have to look at the facts, and you don't go on what you want the facts to be or what you've been told the facts are supposed to be. You got to just look at the facts. What are they? What does it say? And what this has said for quite a long time is that the star child is not a human being, not a standard, ordinary human being. It is something other than that. It is therefore, in my opinion, an alien. It is partially human. It's got some human in it, but not a lot. It is going to be mostly alien, and so it just makes it something completely different. And I'm 100% convinced that when we finally can recover, when we get the money to recover the genome, that is going to be the result. The latest DNA result proves that.
we really don't have time for me to get into this or for you to get into it, but isn't there just a possibility that what you're looking at in that DNA that says it's part human, maybe it's not. Maybe it's all alien, and we, our DNA, is from that part of it that looks like ours.
It could well be that. Really, it could well be that, Kevin. It could be the result of one of those three entity beings that I talked about earlier that's being done now with human beings. It could be very much like that, such that the mitochondrial DNA comes from a human egg, but the gamete that was put in, the two gametes that were put together to make the zygote, come from two alien types, or as one of the, I think one of the Kevin said, another hybrid, or another pair of hybrids. It could be very, very complex, a complex genetic package. It certainly could. We won't know until we sequence the whole genome and start putting it up against a human being to see what the differences are and how massive or less than massive they are. We just won't know till we get there, but we're on our way there now, and we have a pretty clear vision of what it's going to be like when we get there. It's certainly not going to be human, no question.
Outstanding. Lloyd, thank you for being with us this evening. It's been fascinating, as always. And if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as I close the show. All right, folks, Lloyd Pye, I told you so. Those of you who are members got an email from me today, and I told you it was breaking news that we were going to have Lloyd Pye on the show with us tonight. Didn't know that could happen till last night, right after the show. Well, it's time for me to say, my friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me, just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.